Good morning again. Welcome back to Sounds Like Canada on CBC Radio 1, Sirius Satellite 137. I'm Sheila Rogers. In this hour, a woman who makes her living doing the kind of work that has made the shows like CSI phenomenally popular. Tanya Peckman is a forensic anthropologist. She uses skulls, skeletons, and reconstruction to divine clues that might be found in the bodies of the dead. Fascinating line of work. And right now, she's trying to gain information from the living that might ultimately help catch killers. That's ahead in our next hour, along again with a few more of your nominations for the Seven Wonders of Canada. Right now, though, Robert Sawyer is with me in Toronto, and if you're a fan of science fiction, you'll know that it's a genre that, beyond robots and aliens, deals regularly in the giant questions of life, death, and particularly, in this case, eternal youth. Writers like Robert Heinlein and Isaac Asimov have made careers out of probing the future, and so Robert Sawyer can count himself in very good company. He's played with all these elements through a string of award-winning, best-selling books. His latest is called Rollback, and it's about a married couple in their 80s who go through a rejuvenation procedure that's designed to roll them back into their mid-20s, and they have incredible motivation for this, too. Robert Sawyer with me in Toronto. Good morning.
Good morning, Sheila.
How
glad
nice
to be
see
here.
You
Thank
again.
You. I'm delighted.
What inspired you to deal with rollback, as you call it?
Well, you know, I've been a full-time freelance writer for a couple of decades, and that's a very sedentary job. If you do that, you sit at your desk, it's easy to put on a pound or two a year. And after two decades, I found myself almost 50 pounds overweight. So I decided to tackle that. I had won the biggest awards in my field. I was looking for a new challenge, and somebody said to me, well, do something personal. I lost the weight, and I felt younger. I felt decades younger. And what we do in science fiction very often is we take the metaphoric, you feel younger, and make it literal. What would it be like to actually be younger? And when I started noodling around about this, I found that in the labs and universities, there's a lot of serious genetic and medical progress being made, not just in slowing down aging, but actually potentially in reversing it. We're already reversing it in mice. We will, I have no doubt, this century reverse it in human beings.
And will you be around to see it in this century?
Well, this is, you know, this is a scary time for a lot of us. There's no doubt that it'll happen this century. Am I part of the last generation? Are you and I part of the last generation that will, you know these same lifespans that humanity has always known, a handful of decades? Or are we the first generation that's going to go on for centuries? If it's not us, it's our children. It's definitely going to happen this century.
Robert, before we get to the bigger questions, many of such issues you've just raised in my answer to your question, I need to know how you lost the weight.
I'm a low-carb dieter. I've had great success with that. And my doctor looked at the results and said, whatever you're doing, keep on doing it. I just had a full physical. My blood sugar, my blood chemistry, my cholesterol, all of that is fine. And it's not for everybody. I'm not an advocate or an evangelist for anything but science fiction. But it worked for me, and it's 3 years now that I've had the weight off.
Well, congratulations. It's nice to see less of you, I guess. That the protagonist in the book has also had a huge weight loss in his life, and it sounds like maybe he did Atkins.
Well,
or
he
some
did.
Other,
absolutely. Yeah, okay. Atkins by name, absolutely. Yeah. Yes, he did.
And, but are these problems that you foresee in the future? Won't we be able to manage our weight better?
Well, you know, we will, but it's always... yes, I think we will. I think the obesity epidemic is one that we will put an end to. We eat terrible food because it tastes good. It should be a trivial problem of chemistry to make good food taste good. You know, we grew up on the savanna of Africa thinking that fatty food was the ideal high energy source, and it just isn't for our sedentary lifestyles. Mm-hmm. But yes, I suspect that we will not only be enjoying what we eat, but that it will all be good for us in the decades to come, for sure.
Tell me about this rollback procedure that your couple undergoes.
We know what the laundry list is of all the things that cause us to age. You know, there's this general slow degradation that starts in your early 20s and just slides into the grave over a period of decades. We know what happens genetically, that their errors accumulate in the copying of your DNA from generation to generation in your body. Your cells in your body go through many generations. We know about the poisons that build up in our bloodstreams and in our cells, oxidization poisons, all kinds of free radicals, which are little bits of molecular garbage that shouldn't be there. We have the laundry list. And now it's simply a question of developing an integrated suite, having like an orchestra of things that will happen to get rid of and reverse all of those difficulties. And it's at this point, as they like to say, mere engineering. It happens to be biochemical engineering, but it's the problem is known. Now it just takes the wherewithal to solve it.
This couple, they're both 87 years old.
Yes.
And can I give this away?
Sure.
One of them is rejuvenated and rolled back, and the other one isn't.
It says it on the dust jacket, so yes, we
all
can
right,
give it away.
You, okay. What kind of issues does this raise?
Well, you know, I mentioned the metaphoric and the literal in science fiction. Now, literally, they're getting young again, but there's also the case that some people are getting medical procedures and some people aren't. And if there's a great Canadian issue to be faced in this century, it is, you know, when Tommy Douglas and the CCF invented socialized medicine for this country, which, you know, Tommy Douglas was recently named by the CBC the greatest Canadian for that. He had no idea. Nobody had any idea that you could put not just thousands, but millions or even hundreds of millions of dollars into prolonging somebody's life and improving the quality of that life. So one of the big issues that this couple dramatizes, one for whom, in this case, it simply works, and the other for whom it doesn't work, is that disparity between the haves and the have-nots. And can we, in the age of, I like to call it, with a bow to Paul Simon, the age of miracle and wonder. We have these wonderful technologies, but not everybody can afford them, or nor will our government be able to afford to give them to everybody. And I think that's at the heart and soul of this, is that metaphoric issue, but the personal ramifications of it obviously are the emotional meat of the novel.
Well, and for one thing, Don becomes younger than his own son.
Yes, that's right, exactly. He's born in 1960, as I happen to be. He's 87 when the novel opens, year 2047.
And by the way, healthcare is still free and universal.
Yes, and this is an important cause for me. I do think, as I just mentioned, these things are enormously expensive. But then so were computers, you know, when they first started out. And now everybody has them. And soon there'll be Cracker Jack prizes. Computers. Medical technology is no different than any other technology. There are enormous developmental costs. They have to be borne by the early adopters. And ultimately, though, the cost approaches simply the raw material cost. And pharmaceuticals, medical procedures, all of that will come down in price. If we can get over the current healthcare crisis, we will be able to make this a sustainable model forever, our great Canadian healthcare system.
But let's go into the personal
yes.
dimension, as you do in the novel, and you've, you know, one partner is in his 20s while his wife is 87. What kind of meeting of people does that create?
Well, exactly. I mean, one of the things about being in your 20s, but with the life experience of 87, is you'd like to think that you've gained some wisdom and some perspective. And yet, you know, this man has slid into his 80s, and his libido has waned, as one might. And suddenly he's young, vigorous, virile, and even kind of good-looking, to his surprise, because he had been chubby the first time around, and now he's not the second time around. And he's getting attention from what he thinks of as girls. You know, from his point of view, somebody in their 20s is a girl. And yet he responds, much to his surprise, much to his guilt. And a large part of the novel is dealing with this. It isn't just an intellectual disparity, although he's got the sharpness back that she has lost through the dulling of decades. But he's also got the randiness of a 25-year-old and is trying to be faithful and loyal and caring and yet also respond to what his body is telling him to do. I try to, you know, hit a balance there and not be sensational about it, but it was the very difficult material to address in fiction.
It is also a love story, though.
Totally. H.G. Wells, before we had this term science fiction, H.G. Wells used to call his books scientific romances. He meant romances in the old-fashioned sense. It was just a term for a novel.
Like Roman, based on French.
But I like that juxtaposition, scientific romance, because the standard romance novel, it's either, you know, it's Romeo and Juliet or one of the other half dozen romance templates that we've always seen. In science fiction, we like to say we always have a new version. We don't just have boy meets girl, boy loses girl. We also have boy builds new girl. And what I'm doing here in Rollback, I think, is looking at the human heart in a way that no one's been able to do before. But the technology, we're the advanced scouts, the SF writers. These disparities will exist. I start the book with a quote, an epigram. One of the great joys of being a novelist is you look around for the pithy things others have said. My opening page has Satchel Paige, the baseball player. And he said, I thought it was just lovely, he said, how old would you be if you didn't know how old you are? And we go through stages in life. The signposts are there. In your 20s, you're sowing your wild oats perfectly fine. Your 40s, you better have settled down and start on that career path, saving for retirement. In the 60s, you're a grandparent. If you take away those signposts, how do you figure out how you're supposed to behave? And my character, Don Halifax in the novel, is thrown at sea. He doesn't know how he's supposed to behave and is just trying as best he can to honor the love he's had for six decades now. And also to be true to the new version of himself.
I think what's really interesting and why this story worked so well for me too is that many couples as they age are going to age differently.
Yes.
Of course. One may lose the use of their limbs. You know, there will be, as you call them, disparities. And just the kind of thinking that goes into that kind of difference that already exists.
Yes,
in so many
absolutely,
relationships.
Absolutely. Yeah. There's a little moment in the novel where Sarah, the woman who has stayed 80, thinks about, saying, I can't help being old.
Yeah.
And then she reflects, but he can't help being young either. And this disparity is a huge issue. You see it dramatically in couples, of course, where one has Alzheimer's and one is still acute. These are tragic, tragic issues. But we tend not to talk about them either. We say, oh, so-and-so is going through a rough time. And we don't explore that. Part of what science fiction does do is concentrate on the page and perhaps magnifying with the dramatic devices, such as the real age disparity here in the novel Rollback, let us really get to what it is that normally we just say, we know that's going on, but it's off to the side and we don't want to think about it.
The impetus for the Rollback is very interesting, too. A communication from another world.
That's right. When I set out to write about rejuvenation, we all personally might desire it, but what kinds of things do we do as a society that might make society say it's more important than just you that you live for 8, 9, 10 decades? And there's been this huge effort now going on for 47 years, we've been doing this since 1960, to try and detect alien radio transmissions. Radio, as we all know, is the sure sign of intelligent life anywhere in the universe. And so we take our big antenna dishes and we listen to the sky day and night. You can listen in the daytime too, and hope to pick up the alien equivalent of Sounds Like Canada. And therefore know that aliens are out there. Well, we haven't done it yet, but we also have really, despite 47 years of searching, have only begun to channel surf the cosmos.
You just coined a new word.
Channel surf the cosmos?
No, surfing.
Surf? Did I?
It's beautiful.
All right, I got to write that one down. Put it in the next book. We haven't yet found anything, but we're really only ramping up to the search. And in the next decade or two, we will have done a significant real search of the sky. We will either find these aliens or we won't. So what I posit is a researcher at the University of Toronto in the year 2009, 2 years from now, who is instrumental in decoding the first ever alien radio transmission. But light travels at the speed of light, hence the name. And it's the same speed radio travels at, 300,000 kilometers a second. It takes, and the nearest star to us besides the sun is 4 light years away. I mean, it takes 4 years for radio signals from Alpha Centauri to reach us. As it happens in the novel, the system is almost 20 light years away. It's a 40-year round trip between hi and how are you is 40 years. So my woman, who in her 40s was instrumental in this, is around 40 years later when the reply comes. But now she's 87. She's content to be in the waning days, maybe even, of her life. But society isn't. They say, we're going to roll you back. We need you because it's a dialogue and you are our point man. You're our front person for that.
And really, the whole Rollback initiative is to restore her youth.
That's right. And this was important to me because there's a shallowness in all of the search for the fountain of youth stories. You always think that, it's petty and self-absorbed to be looking for the fountain of youth. So these are two people who are happy. They were good parents, good grandparents. They both had good careers. And now they're content, a life well lived, and they're looking back in fond remembrance at the things they've done. And then it's all disrupted when society says, we're not done with you yet. And I thought, to make the characters sympathetic, it's way more interesting to read about people who have, you know, greatness thrust upon them than people who go searching for it.
There is a scene in the book that's a life imitating art kind of moment, or maybe the other way around. The character, Sarah, is being interviewed by, sounds like Canada, well, me.
By Sheila Rogers, absolutely.
So what was it like comparing the real thing to art?
Well, I've been on Sounds Like Canada before, which is part of what, it's a circular, it goes like that, but it's wonderful. I mean, part of the novel, I'm an American publisher, but this is, and I'm translated all over the globe, but I set my novels in Canada, and I do think we have such wonderful models here. I talked about the socialized medicine, the multiculturalism of Toronto features greatly in this novel, and our great institutions, the CBC, we haven't mentioned it, but Don Halifax, the guy who does get the role back, was forever a sound engineer at the CBC. I think that institution, along with our socialized medicine, will endure because they define who we are.
I like you. You can stay.
Thank you.
Weren't you studying at Ryerson at some point?
I did radio and television arts at Ryerson, class of 82. It's my 25th anniversary this fall. And although I loved the studies, I came to realize that I was not by nature a collaborative writer, which if you're writing for television or radio, it
absolutely is.
Everybody gets in there and you have to serve many masters. And so I decided, what I really preferred was doing books. Because although I work with a very fine editor, my editor in New York is named David Hartwell, and we've worked together for 10 years now, nonetheless, it's my vision the way I want to present it. And I found books more liberating than scripts. But there's a wistfulness about that life that might have been. And to some degree, Don's life, having pursued that path, working at the CBC, been a broadcaster, could have been the path that I myself might have gone down. And that's, as all science fiction is, the what-ifs. In that way, it's one of my own personal what-ifs in that novel.
And if you are a fan of the CBC and you listen to credits, as I know many people do, you would hear Joe Mahoney on cue with Gian Gomeshi.
Absolutely.
And Joe is also a character, minor, in the book.
That's right. I'm sure he doesn't think it's minor, but yes.
I didn't think it was either. Believe
Joe
me.
Joe is in the book because some time ago, Joe and I worked on a pilot for CBC that did not sell, for a series about science fiction called Faster Than Light. We actually did three pilots, and although the CBC is usually right, in this case they were wrong and did not pick it up. But a little bit of an in reference for me and those who did hear the pilot, which was aired, is that there's a reference to Don Halifax having worked on this, the one CBC show I named that never occurred, which is FTL, Faster Than Light.
Perfect. I'm speaking with Robert Sawyer. The occasion is his new novel, Rollback, and you're listening to Sounds Like Canada on CBC Radio 1 and Sirius Satellite Radio 137. The last time I talked to you, we didn't have a satellite radio.
Well, this is it. The world changes so rapidly. Yeah. And one of the reasons I love science fiction and why I try to make it accessible and not just for the geeks, just for the diehard reader.
But the geeks love you.
The geeks love me, too. I get the awards, I get the sales in the SF specialty stores, but I'm also out there for the general public because, Georges Clemenceau said war is too important to be left to the generals. Science fiction, sad to say, is too important to be left to the geeks. It is a field that talks about how rapidly our technology is changing and not how we'll be dehumanized by it. The central struggle, I think, of modern science fiction is how we can retain our humanity and our core values in the face of mechanization. So yes, we have Sirius Satellite Radio now, which is wonderful. We have, I think, the huge advent of social networking on the World Wide Web has emerged since the last time you and I spoke. All of this wonderful change, our struggle and the central issue of science fiction right now is how do we stay human in the face of an increasingly cyber world?
One of the characters says, a race that survives a technological adolescence almost certainly is very long-lived.
Yes, and we're at that really scary moment right now that, it used to be that the worst anybody could do is hit somebody else with a rock, and then somebody would hit that person with a rock, end of discussion. We saw on September 11th, and that's now 6 years ago, what terrorists could do with something we would think of as a low-tech weapon, an airplane. We saw at Virginia Tech just recently the horror that one deranged person can perpetrate. We're reaching the point where our technological levering power lets any disgruntled person do an enormous amount of damage. This is very, very scary. And I think one of the things that SETI is all about, why there's almost a fervor for the search for extraterrestrial intelligence, is if we pick up a message from somebody who has survived, we've only had radio since 1895, 112 years. We've had nuclear bombs for 50 years after we got radio, we got the nuclear bomb. How long can you survive with the nuclear bomb and with the power of mass destruction? We've only proven you can survive 60 years. Can you survive 600, 6,000? The object lesson of finding a race that did would be a great encouragement to us. There's so much fatalism right now that we're living in the figurative or real end times, and to know that it doesn't have to end in a bang would be very, very salutary.
And then there's the option of having a rollback.
Yes, that's right.
Would you have one?
Yes, I would. I would. When I was young, speaking of the CBC, in 1985, when I was 25, I interviewed Judith Merrill, the great science fiction editor and social activist who lived in Toronto. And she must have been 70 at the time. And we were talking, I was interviewing her for Ideas, another CBC institution. We were talking about what, are the great science fiction tropes. And one, of course, was immortality. And I said, but, wouldn't it be boring? And I'm 25. And she fixes me with this steely laser beam gaze that she was famous for, and she said, only a child could think immortality would be boring. When you get near the end, the to-do list of things you never got to do goes on over the horizon. And I think, absolutely, I've got a lot I want to do. I've got, hopefully, decades left to do it, but I got centuries worth of books in my to-be-read pile.
Excellent. Yeah, I do, too. And many wonders of Canada to go and see.
Absolutely.
We've been running this contest.
I think it's a wonderful idea.
And do you have a wonder?
I have two. I've got a natural and an artificial. My natural one is the Badlands of Alberta and the great dinosaur bone beds there. I'm wearing I got my CBC visitor badge on it, but I'm over underneath
peel
this.
Peel it off.
I'll peel it off.
Yeah.
You can hear that. It's the Royal Tyrrell Museum of Paleontology in Drumheller, Alberta. Anywhere you go in the world, the great dinosaur skeletons that you see on display, many, many of them came from Canada, from Alberta. This is the dinosaur capital of the world. And the bone beds there are a wonderful heritage, and they're so, so significant. So I boost that with great deal. We also have world-class science in this country, and we tend not to spotlight it. I set three previous novels, Hominids, Humans, and Hybrids, in Sudbury, and I know there's some talk about the great nickel, the Kitch in Sudbury. Go down below. Go 2 kilometers underground, and you find the Sudbury Neutrino Observatory, which is a vast sphere filled with heavy water that's used to detect particles put out by the sun and distant supernovas. It's one of the great science labs of the 20th and 21st century. It's here in Canada, down underground. The exciting work that goes on there is world class, and that would be definitely a technological wonder of Canada.
You've given me three gifts this morning. The book, Rollback, Surfing, the word.
Yes.
And now I don't have to say man-made anymore.
Artificial.
I'll be saying artificial.
That's right.
Okay.
We try not to be sexist in the 21st century.
And on the CBC. Robert Sawyer, great pleasure to see you again. Thank you so much.
Sheila. Thank you.
And thanks for the great read. Robert J. Sawyer is the author of Rollback, and it is published by Tor.
Lovely. Oh, pleasure. Total pleasure. Thank you.
At least we weren't saying we hate each other when the mics were up. That's good. In our next half hour, I'll be speaking with the forensic anthropologist Tanya Peckman. Stay with us. We'll be back after our information update.